First, we have to know that there is Pshat and Drush. Are you familiar with this? Have you ever seen, I mentioned this a few times, have you ever seen those Jewish art pieces where they make a drawing using a text? Have you ever seen this?
You can only see it from far away?
Yeah.
When you go up close, you can't see.
No, no. Oh, okay. He is using a text. He is drawing a picture of a man. And the lines are letters, tiny little letters, which when you take them under a magnifying glass, you can read it. This you have never seen. The simplest I saw was a Mogen David. You know what a Mogen David is? Huh? You know Mogen David. The six corners. The Mogen David was the book of Esther. Yeah, the entire book of Esther in that Mogen David, in that drawing. So when you look from far, you see a drawing of a Mogen David. If you come close and you start magnifying glass, you can read a book. Are you following what I say? There is the Lubavitcher, the Chabadnikus. There is a drawing of the first Rebbe of Chabad. And that drawing takes in the Tanya. The Tanya, this is his magna opus. That's his. And but it was very very convenient for the artist, because the Rav Shneur Zalman had a very big beard. So there was place to put in something. Now, if you look from far, you see the image of the author of the Tanya. When you take a magnifying glass and you come close to the ear, you read a chapter of the book. You come close to the nose, you read another chapter of the book. Are you following? So it means that it has two messages. It has one message, which is the entire image as a whole, and then each and every part of it has its own message. Is that clear? This is in Torah. In Torah, the entire portion and the entire story has one message, the sequence. But if you take it under a magnifying glass, you'll find that every part of it has a message. Break it into smaller parts. Every part of it has a message. The same thing, which is with natural things. Take this. It makes sense as a recorder, right? Huh? Now, if you'll take any part of the material, you'll find that you can learn and have information about the physical nature of it. Huh? And you break it to small parts, each and every part tells you something. You break it to molecules, each and every you can learn something about the nature of molecules, right? And then you break it again, and you can learn something about the nature of atoms. And then you can break it again. Is it clear what I'm saying? Exactly like this is learning Torah. On the surface there is one meaning, and then when you go and with a careful search, you find more meanings. You follow what I say? Normally, when we learn, we don't dare even to take the magnifying glass. First, we want to know what's the entire, the surface picture, and what's the meaning, and what's the story, and the message of the surface picture. Are you following what I say? In Bereshis, it is the opposite. To know the the message of the entire story, the way it's told, impossible.
Does that just apply to Bereshis or the whole book of Bereshis?
No, it applies to Bereshis, not to the whole book of Bereshis. We'll come to it. But on the other hand, parts of it, I can learn. A surprising Rashi, if you learn the Parsha, and by the end of the creation, the second story, the repetition of the creation of the human being, and then comes in the story with the snake. Huh? And then by the end it says that Hashem made for them some garments that he can wear. Remember this? And Rashi says that this statement that Hashem made for them garments should have been before the story with the snake. For some reason it's not. And I'm wondering, because before it says they could run around naked. They were running around naked. And it didn't bother them. You follow? And when somebody reads the Chumash, he thinks, because of that need that they had to cover themselves, Hashem gave them garments. Rashi says no. And when you look at the Rashi, and there's a message. It is true that our clothing gives us protection. Protection from cold, a protection for heat. It's true. It's true that our clothing is adding, especially in the post Adam and Eve era, it's already adding to our sexual decency. Is that right? But it seems that clothing has another function. When you are going to a reception, and the reception expects you black tie and to be formally dressed. When you are formally dressed, you are not dressed just for protection or for decency. It is it is a decoration of your personality. You know that? You know that clothing is decoration, decorates the personality, and blends with the person. The same as a camera can pick up different phases of a face. You know that? Huh? Which means that what we are, how we look, is a complex. And sometimes the camera picks up just one phase of it. Are you familiar with this? Huh? The same thing, our eye also picks up the same. our inner eye. You know what I mean now? Inner eye? Huh? We have information, and a very simple thing, recognizing handwriting, recognizing signatures. Now today, machines are picking up checks and documents, but a little, not long ago, it was the teller at the bank who had to recognize whether the signature is right, and he compared it with a card. You know that. How many signatures had a bank teller to see during a day? Could he really explain how he recognizes a signature? He can't. But he still recognizes it. This is the inner eye. I am trying to figure out how to explain this. What we know is one thing. What we can explain to others is a different thing. In order to explain, I have to use a language. And it's possible that I know more than I have a vocabulary in my language. But I know it.
How is that?
Huh?
How is that? We think with the vocabulary that we have. Don't think in terms of
let me give you an example. Can you give me a definition? What is way? A road. What is a way? There is a way between here, let's say, and Zichron Yaakov. It's a way to go. A fellow has a way in life, a way of life. And somebody has a very difficult problem, and he just discovered a way how to solve it. There, how many uses they have for the expression way? What really is the concept of way? And it's not a coincidence, because in every language it's the same. Derech, huh? Same thing. Huh?
A process, a method of getting from one thing to another.
Fine. That's the definition. So the definition is the distance that we have to cover between the point where I am and the point which I want to reach.
Or the method.
Huh?
Or the method.
It's the same thing. Yeah, it's the same thing. Now, tell me, here are 100 people, and I asked you what percentage of those 100 people will make use of the word way correctly. And then I'll ask you again, what percentage of those 100 people will be able to give you the definition? Which percentage is larger? The people who know how to use it, or the people who know to explain how to use it?
How to use it.
Huh? The people who know how to use it is much larger. How did they know when they can't explain it? So, which means, which means that there is knowledge and there is also the ability to explain my knowledge. the ability to translate my knowledge in a language. The same as we have a language, we have also a language of thought. And there may be many informations which we have, which we cannot even get to our language of thought. Is it clear what I'm saying? The same thing is with our eye. I can describe what I see, and what is more important are the things I cannot describe when I see them. I cannot describe the difference between 500 signatures. Very hard to describe. But my eye sees it and recognizes it. And what is even more motivation is in that inner eye and inner information, where you don't have to think when you drive. If you will have to, each and every move, you'll have to make a decision. Now I step on the gas, now I step on the brake, now I turn the wheel. It'll be a hazard, you'll be a disaster on this road. It becomes automatic, isn't it? It becomes, you drive already by reflexes. It's true, no? Mm-hmm. So it seems that the inner knowledge, or whatever call it, the subconscious, is really the one which we are using in actual life. The rest is information for our brain.
I don't understand.
Huh?
I don't see it. I don't see what you see. What's this with the checks again, with the signature? What's the point of it?
The point is that if somebody would place for you 500 different signatures, and you'll be able to recognize, well, you have a card file with people who signed, you'll be able to recognize. But if somebody would ask you to analyze, what is that way of writing different than the other way of writing? It's too fine that you should be able to analyze. You can analyze 10 signatures. Handwritings. Handwritings will see more. How many forms do you have to write one letter? What you can imagine.
Let's see, if you have these cards,
mm-hmm.
So they have all these checks, so I see that this person writes like this, and the card matches. I do that with all the cards, 1,000 of them, 1,000,000 cards, whatever card you give me. I can see that this looks like this, and this looks like this. I can see that this doesn't look like this.
Sure, you can see, but you cannot tell me if you want to teach me. You remember all those signatures, and you train me. And you tell me, his signature has lines in that direction. His signature has lines in that direction. How many signatures can you explain me, to me?
By memory, you say?
Yes. Not only by memory. You look at them, and I don't see them. And you are training me, and show me if it will come, if it's and you describe me. How many could you?
I could do one, you could do them all, no?
You can do them all?
Why not?
You're a genius.
You say that's
it. Listen,
you've got to try and explain to the person who can't see the signatures the style of the writing so that when he sees them he can recognize them. You haven't got the vocabulary possible to explain to the other guy 500 different types of signatures they're writing so that he'll be able to recognize them just from your description. Right. You yourself can tell, match them, but what Rabbi Wasserman okay. think is
that right? That's exactly
what Rabbi Wasserman, you have got the vocabulary to try and explain to him what the differences are in each
hand. Oh, I don't know, is this similar to the inexplicable quality, the inexplainable quality of Leila being Kobra for Tabashir and Tushrahad of Nechamata? Tell me on the fact that, that God is beyond description of our spoken language, beyond and the words that we describe, the idea of that kind of human perception is which is beyond words also?
Fine. The only thing is that by the limitation of human perception of humans, you multiply it in millions of times, and then you have your limitations of understanding divinity. But it's along the same line. Now, do you remember I mentioned it? You know we are talking to each other. We never saw each other, you know that. Do you know that?
What?
We never saw each other.
Who?
Me and you.
When did we never see each other?
Because why do you think? Who are you? Your nose? Your beard? I am talking to your personality.
I always thought he was his nose.
Huh?
I always thought he was his nose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No. He should keep his nose out of trouble. No, is it clear what I'm saying?
We never saw each other as far as...
We never saw each other.
As far as our
there is no... We are communicating.
Mm-hmm.
It's not our nose is communicating. It's we are communicating. Huh? But we never saw each other. And the mirror helped me to see myself. What we really are is something which is non-tangible. So therefore I say the limitations which we have in the conceptions of humans multiplied in the millions and millions of times gives us an image of the limitations of our conception of the Creator. That's what I'm saying. Huh? Now, I don't know what brought me to the inner eye.
Sheldon, you're talking about what is it, the clothes.
You're talking,
huh?
You're talking about the clothes.
Right. I was talking about clothes. Right. So, and the inner eye blends the person with his dress and is picking up a certain phase of that man, of that person. And this may be a very important element of dress. While I am dressing for Shabbos, I am dressing for Shabbos. I am not picking out my Shabbos dress for protection. I decorate myself for Shabbos, right? But while I have them, they protect me too. It's part of the dignity of the human being. Forget about decency, about sexuality, about practical uses of clothing. Part of the dignity of human being is his dress. And when the human being was created, the next step was to give him a dress. And this is what Rashi is saying, that it should have been written immediately after his creation about dress. And for some reason, it was interrupted in the story. Now, this is not the general image of the parsha. This is just picking out, reading one point of it. You follow? In Breishis, I cannot read the general picture, because the general picture is much too abstract.
Abstract in what sense? Other than...
Abstract? I'll tell you what's abstract.
Try to define what abstract is.
Huh?
As far as Breishis.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Different kinds of abstract.
I was starting, last time, I was starting about the Seder Satur, hidden parts of the Torah. Remember? We came at that time to a conclusion, if you still remember, that it's possible that those are questions which no human mind can answer. But on the other hand, if the answer is given to us, some humans can understand. Do you remember we spoke about it? Huh? Why? Why some humans? Because it's a question, it's also a question of abstractions. All thinking goes through the imagination. Any idea that I examine has a certain image in my mind, and that image I examine. I don't know how to explain it better. Understanding, really studying a subject, is contemplation. What is contemplation? Contemplation is, if I am taking an object and I examine it very minutely from all sides, this is contemplation. And then, maybe if there are cracks, if I look from the far, I wouldn't notice them. When I take it, a very careful examination, slowly, I'm not... Then I may discover cracks, I may discover all kinds of things, right? Exactly the same as thinking. Thinking is taking an object under the eye of our brains and contemplate it, and then we are finding it. And sometimes we overlook. I'll tell you something. My father, Zechen Baruch, told me. He says, what is a genius? He says, a genius is not the one who can build intellectual skyscrapers. He says, a genius tells you things which are very simple. Simple. Everybody can say. He says, somebody comes in with a question. In Bismarck, he says, somebody comes in with a question. Nobody knows how to answer. Comes the genius, he says, and he tells you an answer, and everybody's embarrassed. Why didn't we say it? It's so simple. I'll give you an illustration. I think that illustration comes from Abraham Bliskas. I think so. Somebody comes in and says, he was in a city. He saw over there two blind people who have a brother who has no brothers. That's possible. If you know, don't say it. You can write it to me, though. Don't say it.
What's the question?
Again, he came to a city and he found over there two blind people who have a brother, and that brother has no brothers. What's happening? You said it. The average people don't find it. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because when I am asked a question, I contemplate the material, the element which is given, and I am trying to find out where there's an opening. But if by listening to you, I added color to what you said, I am looking at it already with the color that I painted it. And if, when you hear two blind people, you think about two men, you will never get out of that, of the circle of men, of the male circle. Now, the genius is the one who catches the element before painting it himself. Then it comes out very simple. But then there is something else. I just wanted to illustrate you that it's really examination, the same thing as you can do a physical examination, you can do a mental examination. But in your, you have to have an image of what you're handling. Now, you remember I was talking about mathematical symbols. If you cannot imagine mathematical symbols, to some meaning for them, you cannot handle them. Neither maybe things which are more intangible than a group of numbers, a group of figures. And now when it comes to creation, it's very intangible. Now we have the human being is intangible. We cannot imagine what the human being. You follow? Now, all the stories that is told to us in
Bresha. The same as an Adam?
Huh?
You said a human being is not the same as an Adam, with that name, label Adam. You said we can't imagine a human being.
Right.
Can we imagine an Adam?
No. Okay. But still an Adam, we have some mathematical formula for it. Mm-hmm. We have no mathematical formula for the human being.
What's the formula for Adam?
Huh?
I think you said Adam, not Adam. You said Adam.
Adam.
No.
Adam.
Adam Arisha. Oh, you're talking about
not
Adam.
You said Adam.
No, I thought you were talking about Adam. No. Adam is a human being.
So then we can't imagine.
So,
Adam.
No, we can't. Now the only thing. In Bresis, I can tell you that we have side lessons, but the central is matched to an intangible. I'll give you another side lesson. The fourth day of the creation, it says, the Creator said, let there be luminaries. And those luminaries should be for time. They should tell you years and days and months, and they also should give you light. What is more important? A time measuring device or light? What is more important?
Light.
Pardon?
Light.
Light is more important. In Chumash it's secondary. First, the luminaries are a device for measuring time. You know, we measure time only by the planets. You know that. Huh? What's a day, what's a year, what's a month? They're all measured by the movement of the planets, right? Very convenient. But light is more important, no? The Chumash has it reversed. Has time measuring first and light after. Why?
We need to see things in time and space. maybe more than
I'll tell you, very simple. What is time to a human being?
It denotes, it denotes the creation. I mean, if you have time, you have to have the aspect of space. Because the planets have to move.
I'm not that philosophical. I think very simple. Very simple. Time is life. Because what does a man, a person, a human being have in his life more than time? A minute passed, that minute is not coming back. A minute passed, a part of his life is gone. A person is rationed. Time has been rationed to us. This is the importance of time. The American says time is money. Time is more than money, time is life. Now, the American language has it. They are talking about killing time, right? It's murder. That's why it precedes light. It's life itself. In Talmud you have it, in Gemara. You have it. The Brocha of Shechiyonu. You know the Brocha of Shechiyonu? Huh? Things that you do periodically. You thank Hashem for having given you life. Shechiyonu, Vekiyimonu, Yigonu, the one who kept us alive to this moment. The Gemara calls that Brocha Zman, time. That's the thank you that we owe the Creator for time. Because time and life is equal. It's called Zman. Now, this is a side lesson which you can learn in Breishis. But if you want to learn how the luminaries were created, that's a different story. You have to be ready for it. When you go on with Breishis, you have constantly side lessons. But the central lesson, we are not prepared. When you come further in Chumash, you can pick up the central lessons. And then, if you find some side lessons, fine. Did I answer you? Huh?
How do you get ready
for this? When are we prepared?
Pardon?
How do you get ready for
it? Yeah. How do you prepare yourself?
By learning. And now, and the Rambam says, that's very interesting. The Rambam says that Gemara is the device for it. I wish, let me take a look what you have here.
Other people have, it seems like people have a deficiency in their eyes. Like, so many people need glasses from studying Torah and everything. It just seems like we would have built a stronger eye.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. I don't know. I think I told you that story with that fellow whose wife is a lousy cook. Did I tell you that story?
His wife is a what?
No. She's a lousy cook. She doesn't know how to cook. And she feeds them with sardines and with tuna fish and with canned.
Sounds like yeshiva.
Huh?
Sounds like the yeshiva. Right.
So one day, he's so tired. Yeah. He gets tired of those cans, goes to the market, and buys himself steaks, good steaks, good chops. I know potatoes, everything the best. Brings it to the kitchen and tells his wife, now, I want a supper. Will he get a supper, that fellow or not? Why? He'll get a mess. Is that right? Because it's, aside from the ingredients, you need a cook too, right? Now, we are going around And we complain the Creator has created the world such a mess. Isn't it a mess today, the entire world? Now I say, maybe there is nothing wrong with the creation, but we are the lousy cooks. We made a mess of it. Now, we don't know how much generations and generations have abused their health to come today and say, why do people need glasses? You know, how did I answer you on that?
And you can say, well, our legs are still strong and our arms. Why have our eyes, it seems our eyes have become the weakest out of everything? That's what we need the most, is our eyes and ears.
I understand. Yeah. But there is no question that we are already the products of quite a long line of abuses. You know that? It says in Medrash, I think the Sefer Shorim quotes it, you know, the Sefer Shorim, Tatum is just, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam, he took him around all the trees of paradise, and he said, look, what I created is perfect and beautiful. You keep your mind straight. Thank you.
Is that the book you want?
No.
You want Rambam.
Precious. You want Rambam? Okay, I have this also.
I am sorry.
I have this also.
You have it?
Yes.
Oh. Rambam.
And sometimes.
Code of Rambam, first value. Okay. So, the book says to Adam, look, what I created is beautiful and perfect. Keep your mind straight, not to make mistakes and spoil my creation. So it means that we can spoil. And we should not be surprised. Today we have learned already that things work remotely. Huh? You have an atomic explosion in Nevada, and the cows in Pennsylvania are getting contaminated. You know that? There was a problem with the milk in Pennsylvania. It means that we are used already to wireless communications. Where the human being is getting in this world and influencing the world, I'll give you an illustration. You know, an elderly person who has to walk slowly, but suddenly attacked, and he has to run away. It may be a possibility that the man will start running. And he will keep running until the danger is over. Once the danger is over, the man is exhausted. Now, can you imagine this? The question is, where did the energy come to him when he had to run, and how did this disappear? Now you'll say adrenaline, right? Yeah, it is. But to understand adrenaline and to understand it's exactly the same as a man has his capital invested, and he lives not of the capital, but of the earnings. Is it clear? But if there is an emergency, he has to dig into the capital. The emergency is over. His capital shrunk. You follow me? It seems that the energy that we are operating with is not the sum of energy which we have. The human being has stored energy, which is producing a secondary energy. And what we are using is a secondary energy. Under pressure of danger, little by little is coming back. Now, if this is true, who told you that this is only in the human body? Maybe that's the entire universe has a system like this. Now, if science goes and discovers energies, we don't know whether we have not broken into the stored energies. You follow that thing? And maybe a lot of our troubles are just because we are misusing nature. And man walks around in nature as he doesn't even think. I remember years ago I was already thinking about what science is doing. It's like kids who were let into a museum. They think everything is a toy. Because science does not try to figure out what is the function, what is the purpose. But science is trying to figure out what use can we make of things. Now, if a child will find this, he has no idea about recording, and he finds this, what use would he? He can use it as a hammer to hit nails in the wall. How is this? So we don't know how much we messed up already in nature. I'll tell you something which I mentioned some, and it would give you some idea. I have to make a short statement and say that the entire rule of good and bad behavior is exactly this. Everything which is created, everything which exists, has a normal function, has a natural function. If I use it for its function, it's good behavior. If I use it, thank you. Excuse me. If I use, I'll come to it. Yeah, this right. The one on top, right. Oh, I'm sorry, but you have to come to me.
I'm not which book to get next.
So, if you want, this really has to have some time to explain. But to tell you in short, the same as right and wrong behavior with that tape recorder would be the function is sound. Use it for sound and don't use it as a hammer. That's exactly in the entire creation, the entire universe. Things are designed for purposes. And if you use them for their purpose, that's good behavior. If you use them for different things, it's damaging behavior. Take a paper knife and cut a piece of wood with it. You'll spoil the knife, you'll spoil the wood, and you'll waste your energy. And this is starting a cycle, because then you want to use the wood in furniture, and your furniture is going to limp. And it's going to break things up. And it's This is starting a second. Now the question is, how do I know what is right and what is wrong? How do I know? If I live thousands of years, I will still not be able to learn nature and know exactly what's the function of things. And as a matter of fact, Maimonides said that the intelligence of a person can be measured by the amount of functions he can explain to things which exist. Can you explain to me a certain insect, why we need it? There are some of them that we know. Huh? Some of them we don't. Now, so how do we go through life? And this, I have an interesting illustration, which gives you a most important. Imagine there was a pilot strike. By the way, today was a strike at the airports. All airports have a strike. Not by the airline people, but the people who are working at the airports. Today was a strike.
The whole world?
Huh?
The whole world?
No!
In Ben-Gurion.
No, in Ben-Gurion, and they have other airports here. They're not striking. Jerusalem is also an airport, you know that. For IKEA, for the legal. Yeah. Well, there was a strike.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have especially a socialistic country who likes it, they like the cancer strike. I was going to pay for my gas bill, and I had a reason to pay the gas company, so I went this week, and I killed ahead for a morning to go to the past gas, and I'm coming, time. We are on strike today. That's the country here. But anyway, imagine there is a pilot strike. And the company has to fly planes. So they invented a device. Somebody writes a schedule, an exact schedule, when to push that button, when to pull that lever, and so on and so on. He writes a schedule for 3 hours flight. Now, the man, if the man is alert, conscientious, he can fly the plane. Now those flights have the strikes prolonged, and the company is worried because it's really a hazard to fly with such. So they decided the people who are flying the planes now, they'll train them. So they provided them with manuals, and between flights you have to study mechanics, air mechanics, and one day you'll become a pilot. Exactly the same is mitzvahs. Because the same as that ignorant pilot doesn't know why he has to push that button. But if he doesn't push it, the plane will go wrong. The same, I don't know why I have to wear tzitzis. And it seems that there is an influence, and the universe needs it. So the only thing, I have a schedule, I follow the schedule. The Torah doesn't want me to be ignorant. So therefore, between mitzvahs, I have the study of Torah. And this way I will, one day I'll be a pilot too. It's even more. I repeat so many times that illustration. It's even more. People in the passenger's cabin don't have any schedules. But,
passenger's cabin, so I didn't hear.
Right, yeah. Yeah, don't have any schedules. But they have some minimum regulations. Don't smoke while taking off, right? It means that a fellow in the passenger cabin, nobody expects him to fly the plane, but they don't want him to put a plane on fire. Huh? it seems that the Tayag mitzvahs, those have been given for the pilots, the Jew has been placed in the cockpit of the world, of the universe. The non-Jew, nobody expects him to bear tzitzis, nobody expects him to stay away from Chometz and Pesach. Nobody expects him to sit in the city. But there are the seven basic rules for all humans, which, by the way, come in the portion of the week of Noach. The seven basic rules are also part in Bereishis, which, and the basic rules are honesty, no murder, no adultery, no cruelty. Yeah, and the seventh, having courts is one of the rules. And believing in the Creator is one of the rules. Yeah. So it's together seven rules, which are... Now, this is good. You are not flying the plane, but at least don't place society on fire. And it does it make sense what you say?
They also have to buy the tickets too.
Huh?
They also have to buy tickets.
Yeah. Thank you for selling me a ticket. Yeah. Now I asked him to bring the Rambam, so let me read what the Rambam says. The Rambam is talking about the obligation of study of Torah. And this is an obligation for every Jew to study. And what is interesting, so the study of Torah sometimes is very remote from our daily practice. What are you studying here in Eretz Yisrael in Gemara today? Cheska Sabbatim, right? And Cheska Sabbatim are the laws of establishing proof of ownership. Right? It's very remote from my daily practice as a Jew. My daily practice as a Jew takes in character and takes in activities. I picked up this morning, for some reason, I took out the Ahavas Chesed. You know the Ahavas Chesed? Huh? Chofetz Chaim's. And it's full. It is full of teaching me and training me, my character, just for one thing, for consideration for other people. And that's what Havas Chesed is, consideration for other people. Now, this is my daily need to know, because I am not alone. I'm always surrounded with other people. What's consideration of my wife? What's consideration of people who are sitting here? Constantly, a person is never isolated. And it's basic consideration of other people. Cheska Sabbatim doesn't tell you anything about it. That's right? It doesn't tell you how to observe Shabbos. Doesn't tell you how to put on tefillin. It's remote. But the Torah wants us to know it. The Torah wants us to know it, the regulations of the Torah, of the laws of ownership. And not only this. It's not easy to study it. You know, in Gemara, I have the feeling, you know, when you're coming into a parking lot and they put some bumps in the, so that you couldn't go faster than 5 miles an hour. You know? Huh? Don't you have the same feeling when you learn Gemara? Huh? Those bumps? Doesn't let you go fast. And there is almost, I cannot remember any Stickel Gemara at the moment that I didn't have to stop thinking the meaning of it. Now here is what he says. The obligation, really, should be that a person should divide his study in three sections. One section, the written law, which is Chumash, and the prophets. One section should be Mishnah, which Mishnah contains everything, but you have to take it apart. And one section, Gemara, which is taking apart the Mishnah. Now, here is what he says. A person is obligated to divide his time of study in three. One third, the written law. One third, the oral law, which is the text of the Mishnah. One third, to try to understand and figure out the result of things at the beginning already. It means to figure out when you have an idea, you should right away say where it's leading to. Ah, is it clear what I say?
The last one.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the last one?
Pardon?
The last one, the third category. You have a thought,
you have to know where it's leading. He says, when you hear an information, you have to figure out where that information is leading up to. I'll tell you an experience that I have, and this will give you I was a young boy at that time, young bocha, and I was in the yeshiva of Mir. You heard of Mir yeshiva? Yeah. The Mashgiach was Rabbi Ruchem Lubavitch, one of the greatest thinkers that we had in that generation. And a great educator. He talks to me and he wants to test my thinking. He says, there are some people who are mixers. What makes them to be mixers? Mira Yeshiva.
You mean mixers?
I'll tell you right away. I'm not talking about the kitchen tool. Yeah, I'll tell you what I mean. Mira Yeshiva, the Bismarish, that's one big Bismarish, they have here a Bismarish. One big Bismarish, 450 Bochum learning. At the same time, everybody was yelling, and everybody was hearing what he says. Now, one fellow has a kashi. 5 minutes later, everybody in Bismarck knows already that they asked this. And everybody is trying to figure out an answer. And there is another fellow who has a very something bright. Keeps it for himself. You have to pump him to get something out of it. Now the first fellow is a mixer, the second not. And he says, what makes a person to be that kind of a mixer? If he has something, he shares it with everyone. I said, when that what's coming in the container is more than the container can hold. So he says, explain yourself what you mean. So I said, it seems to me that nature is so designed that there are some carpenter work where carpenter parts are locking into each other. Is it clear what I say? Huh? Huh?
No.
They have two birds, and they have to be together. They can be put together even without nails. If you have grooves, and the other one has, I don't know how to call it, like fingers, and they fit in together. So that where there is a need, there is an urge. Are you found? He starts yelling at me. He says that bad what you say.
What do you say?
This is bad, he says. And this is corruption. And keeps on yelling at me. And I don't know, I think I said something logical. And he yells at me. Then, after 5 minutes of calling me all kinds of names, he says, true, he says, the Gemara says, more than the calf wants to be nursed, the mother wants to nurse it. It's true. He says, but it doesn't mean that the mother wants to nurse it because it has too much milk. The mother wants to nurse it because it has a natural feeling that the calf needs it. And he says to me, you're a young man, you don't see the difference yet, he said. You'll grow up, you'll find out. And the difference is between Kedusha and Tumah, between sanctity and Tumah. How do you translate Tumah?
Impurity.
He's right. And he was right. It took me years to realize what he said. You know, a Rebbe who comes in to teach his students, and all he is concerned, he has something bright that he has to tell somebody. And here he has fellows who will have to listen to him. He's the biggest bull. And he kills his students. And who is the good teacher? The good teacher who comes in and he has a feeling what those people need, what the student needs. And he gives him what he needs. He doesn't give him because he has to express himself. You follow this? Huh? Now, but it took me years to feel what this is leading, what this is leading. He saw it right away. In the same as you come at a fork at a road. And here one road from the other is only 2 feet away. But when you travel further, you travel a distance is many miles, right? And that you should sense right away that this goes right and this goes left. That's what the Rambam said. And he's talking about the intellectually. That a person, when he hears a theory, any theory, he should feel right away where it's leading. Further, should be able to produce one information from another. He should be able to compare things to each other. He should be able to understand the methods of how Torah information is being produced, and so on. And this, the Rambam says, is what we call Gemara. That's his definition of Gemara. Which means that besides everything else, Gemara is being used or is served as a mind-grinding tool, as a brain-grinding tool.
That's for sure.
Huh?
That's for sure.
That's for sure, right?
It's all ground up.
Fine. So, the more it grinds your brain, the more it prepares you to pick up more non-tangible ideas.
I don't always see that, though, that's clear.
Huh?
I don't always see that, though, when I don't see that always follows what you said. That the more you grind your brain in this, the process of the Gemara, it's an aid to thinking in an abstract way.
Oh, wait. I don't know why, But the Gemara takes you and gives you constantly abstract. Let me show you something. You learn something, Chesek Sabbatim, right? Huh? Now, what does it say? It starts that ways of producing proof for ownership of real estate is by having in possession for 3 years. Huh? A little further, you just started, maybe you went further, a little further. Omer Rabbi Yechon said, Shamaiti Mehoche Usho, I heard from those who were walking to the school of Usho, Menayin Lachazoka Shegimor Shani, where from do I know that that kind of proof is 3 years? Mesher HaMoed. How do you translate Mesher HaMoed? A goring axe?
Yes. Yeah. I think that sounds quite cool. Severe in
minutes. Huh? I hope I didn't invite the Mesher HaMoed here. So, he said the same as Mesher HaMoed after he got 3 times. You say that he's a goring axe? The same as he kept 3 years, you say it's his. What's the comparison? Where is your logical comparison? You have to think. If you don't think it's a, it doesn't make sense. It just does not make sense. Huh? Now, if you start thinking a little, you'll find something. You'll find that when you make experiments, you can never reach a conclusion unless you repeat your experiments. One experiment never proves anything. You know that? Huh? Because each and everything is composed, is a complex of elements. Now, if you can wait a minute, I'll tell you.
I'll
tell you what it says. Take your head, a glass of coffee on the table, and it's sweet. And somebody tells you, prove me that the sugar makes it sweet. I'll say no. Maybe the coffee made it. But if you have 3 glasses, one is tea and sugar, the other one is coffee and sugar, the other one is cocoa and sugar, and all 3 of them are sweet, then I can prove that it's the sugar that makes it sweet.
It could be the water, too.
Huh? Or it could be the water, right. Right.
You have to make it with gasoline.
Right. Then I have to make a dry experiment.
You have to grind the brain.
Fine. But in any case, it shows you what I mean. That one isolated, give me your name, please. An isolated case cannot prove anything. You have to repeat it several times, and then you'll find out. Huh? Now, the Goring axe is the same thing. You want to know whether he is by nature a tempered axe, or just he had a stomachache that day and he was lying. But he did it 3 times. And that fellow, somebody was using his property for 3 years. He was using it for a year, Rashi says. He took protest. Why didn't he protest? He had a terrible income tax case. And he couldn't do anything about that piece of land. Right? Why did he remain silent the next year? He had mother-in-law trouble. Next year, he had another trouble. It's logical to find the common element. It's with the common element to solve it. Here is where the two are going together. You see what I mean? But you cannot know without thinking.
The part that's the inspiration. The first one was from the week before.
Fine. I'll find it. Thank you, and I'll send it.
I'll come from out, so the tax is there as well.
Yeah.
Okay.